You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
How are you?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 4th of June 2021 to the 10th of... No, 4th of July. That would be a lot of anime to cover if it was going from the 4th of June.
Whoa!
The 4th of July 2021 to the 10th of July 2021. I changed the dates, but not the days, but not the months in my little template. With
July 4th, Big in America.
A solitary exception of Godzilla Singular Point, Episode 1, To Zetto. Which you can find on Netflix. And wow. If you can't engage in delayed gratification, like at least I'm going to do, I don't know about the other guys.
I was fucking tempted, but yeah.
You can watch it all in one go.
Yeah. Let's try and parcel it out. You know, you shouldn't be overeating.
So, we meet at first. The first people we meet are Yun Arakawa and Haburu Kato, who work for Otaki Factory, a company that seems to have a very broad base of roles that it will fulfill.
It's an engineering firm, I guess, to some extent.
Ghost hunting as well, apparently.
I mean, like, you use mechanical equipment for that, sure.
We'll also tune in, like, your satellite box for you, just run a little odd jobs.
Do a bit of wiring jobs for you, that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, like, most of it seems to be going towards funding Jet Jaguar, the best fucking robot, which I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah.
Getting some fights, yeah.
So they're in this... mansion, which is like decorated on the externally, like not super creepy, but just enough like off.
It's a period in which there could be ghosts.
Yes. Yeah. It's got a weird purple painted roof as well, if I remember correctly. So they're picking up signals there. We get established that Yun's like a Sherlock Holmes type. Because he's discussing about how he knows exactly where they're going to have their next meal because of all these different factors.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun. It was more so like local knowledge. It's like, we're going to get fish down the thing. It's like, nah, there'll be no fish if you haven't red meat, except you won't be having red meat because they have too much red meat because the fish aren't biting this time of year. And I was just like, oh, that's pretty fun. You just know the local haunts, basically.
Much more useful than solving murders.
Yeah, sure.
They're picking up this radio signal inside the mansion with their ghost detecting equipment. And they find a secret panel in a bookcase, which takes them down into the basement, where there's a radio picking up a broadcast of a song, which we later learn in the episode is an Indian song.
And a folk song. Yeah.
And it's also being powered by the transmission as well.
It's a radio that is powered by radio waves, so it partially converts that into power to actually play. Yeah.
If you're reading the Dr. Stone, you know all about this.
That's true.
And so they head off to try and find the source of this transmission. Meanwhile, we meet Mei Kamino, who is trying to get to a radio monitoring station because she's been sent here. By the professor, who she's a graduate student under. And she gets delayed in the same traffic jam that the lads get delayed in, but because they're on the motorcycle, they can find a different route to get to where they're going.
Whereas a bus can hardly do a U-turn.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we get established, like, oh, these buses run very rarely. It's like... Is it every 2 hours one comes by?
Every 1 to 2 hours. Yes. It's like living down the country, kind of a schedule to run on.
So she thinks she's going to have a long wait to get to the next... The guy's there to meet her. I can't remember his name. He's sort of like a jovial, bald guy with a moustache.
He's like... He would be the mayor if he isn't already the mayor of this town. Yes. It seems that the guy would be a mayor.
He seems like he might be slimy, but it might just be being a director of something makes you look like that.
It's very easy. There's some weird shit going on. He's taking it all in stride. It's just like, that sure is strange.
Yes. So at this radio monitoring station, they have an alarm is going off. They don't know what the alarm means, but they've got a load of documentation of what to do when the alarm goes off. They're supposed to contact their advisor, who's her professor. That's why she's been sent to go and look at the broadcast that they're picking up, but we later learn seems to also be coming from here. At least what the hidden radio in the mansion is picking up, a transmission from this building of the same song.
So it's like this building's picking up from somewhere else and inadvertently maybe transmitting it elsewhere, like to the seemingly haunted mansion.
It
was like that thing in Venture Brothers where there's the alarm that says...
I was thinking the exact same thing.
It's just like a red light that blinks on and off when there's a problem. And I think it just says like problem, error or something like that. And it's just like, that doesn't fucking tell me nothing.
It's on again. It's called blinking, boys.
Yeah, but like in that it was parody, obviously, of fucking old tech and shit. But in this, it's like, no, this feels very real. It's just like, well, we have the manual. It's like, should we call the guys who inspected it a few years ago? Yeah.
Because the reason they have to call it, it turns out they redid all the wiring a few years ago. And it was like Tacky Factory who did it. But there's two extra wires going to the basement that isn't on the wiring plan, and they don't know why Otaki Factory have installed them.
This feels very real to me because almost the exact same thing happened in my house like 2 months ago. There was like the guy comes by for a random inspection, and there were two plugs in the wall. And he says, "Yeah, I have no idea where he's going to." So, for all I know, I'm like housed over like a fucking kaiju sidle right now.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah.
So they ring up Otaku Factory, and it turns out at the time they're ringing them up, Yun is halfway over the fence trying to break in to find out where the radio call's coming from.
And him answering the phone is like, "They're on to us. The call's from inside the building." It's like, "What do you want?" And it's just like, "Oh, you're calling us about the thing. I don't know about that, bud." And in the meantime, the cops kind of roll up. It's like, "What the fuck are you guys doing? Climbing over a fence in the middle of the night in the countryside?" "Nothing, officer, but..." They get called downtown and their boss does bail them out.
Yes, but this is after we first meet Naratake, AI that Yun has developed, because the AI he's developed will be more honest about his behavior than he himself will be. So he lets the AI answer the police's questions. And this is important.
I like the police are trying to talk to it as well. It's great. It's like, no, who is this talking now? Says to the telephone.
Because on the way home, May is like, looks on their website, downloads the AI program, then wakes up in the morning and goes, "What's this program I downloaded?"
It's installing itself. It's spyware. It's very friendly and polite spyware. Yes. But it's spyware.
I mean, like, when she asked it said it wasn't spyware, so it's probably not, right? Come on. Have more sense about you. It's the university's laptop. It doesn't fucking matter.
It's the bit where it's like, you know, needs permission to use your microphone and camera, and then it starts answering what she's saying when she's questioning about whether she should or not.
Speaking in English first, and she's like, "God, I wish it spoke Japanese." Switching to Japanese, it's like, "Motherfucker, did you access my microphone straight away?"
God's sake. Fucking Godzilla alarm. Fucking put offline by ransomware attack with some idiot.
She names the AI eventually Pelops 2 after her dog. Which he's already seemed to have figured out.
Yeah, it's already turned into dog personality. It's changed from like the automatic clippy picture to the little dog helper picture. It's like, how the fuck did you know that was a dog? It's like, I don't know, I was just looking at your fucking files, photos of your dog, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Instagram. Big man's up top now.
We also eventually learned that May went to school with Habaru. And that his nickname used to be Barbell. Which we get a glimpse of this when she's going through the website and the photos of them all on the website and he's shirtless doing a bodybuilding pose.
That was fucking great. I had to pause and go back. There's a few bits I had to pause in this, but like I was just like, oh, I'm enjoying this. This is very good fun. He's put his fucking Tinder profile up on the official website.
It's a one-stop shop for everything. Is Kaji Factory, so why not? You know, a prospective future husband.
So yeah, Garo the boss is he's working on this Jet Jaguar robot in the company shed, and then eventually they're going to take it out of this festival at the end of the episode. Yun is he talks about SETI, and because he's saying English, they don't subtitle it on on Netflix. I'm trying to think of the little bit, and then eventually, yes, they're at this festival, and Rodan shows up.
Like I was thinking, is that Rodan or is that like a crazy pterodactyl or something? It's just like no, it's probably like at least a baby Rodan, right?
Yeah, it's more pterodactyl shaped than anyway, right? Just the head's like you know a little bit larger than some of the sides, but maybe it's a little baby one.
That's leading. He's facing off against Yun's rescued this kid. He's standing in front of Jet Jaguar. Goro's leapt into Jet Jaguar, and so I assume we're going to get a fight between Jet Jaguar and Rodan next week. And then, meanwhile, back at the radio monitoring station, the boss decides to let one of the guys who's been working there for just 3 months into a little secret about the basement, because he's like, oh, those leads go to the basement. You know, we had a basement. He's like, we do have a basement. You've been here long enough now. I'll show you this, but what you're going to see, you can't tell anybody, because in the basement there is a skeleton, and the skeleton, if you didn't recognise it, the musical cue lets you know whose skeleton it is.
King Kong!
I'm going to be back in 1 second, because on that fucking scary note, to make it more scary, there's a smell of fire, so I'm just going to have a quick look for fire.
Okay.
An alarm's going off. For real. Shit, Rodan coming to smash his house up. Heard we were talking shit.
I super enjoyed this. Like, far more than I was even expecting to.
What it's about, Godzilla's right there in the title. Even like the opening, like credit spiel, is like hinting at this story's going to go crazy. You know, it's a story of how he got here. It's going to go some cosmic places, man. It feels very low stakes, but nonetheless, you're really enthralled by it because it is just like, yeah, I guess that could happen. But something's just a bit off about it all the time. Like, there's a lot of weirdos involved in this. What's going on with it, really? And then, you know, Godzilla's skeleton in the basement, of course, it's going to go crazy. But, you know, I like how you just kind of get laid into it. It's like, yeah, it would be that the heroes of mankind would turn out to be the last guys who serviced the fuse box on this place. You know, why not?
Yeah, and of course, if you know it's written by Toe Enjo, then you've already got, like, okay, the bit where they're talking about May's crazy ideas about a fish which swims backwards through time and butterflies which go through the fourth dimension. You're like, I assume that's going to be real at some point during this.
Great idea for a movie.
And also the town already has like a mural of Godzilla, a historical mural of Godzilla there. So I assume everything's not on fire as Dwayne's back.
If the fire's there, it's invisible, which is even scarier. Okay. So.
Enemy stand user.
No fucking
stand fire.
Someone burning the deep thing. I don't know if he'd moved on, but yeah.
I'm just talking about how much we enjoyed it.
That was great. I could see the temptation of just watching the whole fucking thing, but I think I'm going to be happy enough watching it like week to week because what is it? It's just so like solidly put together. The characters, like, they're all a bunch of weirdos, but they feel like fully developed for it. I'm just like, oh, I want to hang out with these guys.
Yeah, like I'm saying, for it's going to go crazy places, but you feel as right now, like at a low enough stake, you feel kind of, you're going to get kind of really reeled up into it at the same pace they are, you know, because there's...
Yes.
Because we're a bunch of weirdos too, so we could see what's happening to us.
Yeah, the character design is great.
Yeah, like the character design, a lot of the setup design. I am going to see if I can get a fucking sticker of the Jet Jaguar Company logo, because I was just like, I fucking love that. That looks great.
Yeah, apparently the original character designs are by the Blue Exorcist author.
Yeah, the director of this directed the film on that as well, so that's probably why to get him in. It's Tsuyoshi Takahashi. This is one of the few things I actually did. He's like directed himself. He's been, you know, assistant episode director on a bunch of things, but he's given him the wheel on this one.
Mm.
Happy to come back next week, particularly as I'm going to cut some other things from my watching this week.
Like what, Brian?
Well, just the first thing would be the thing I've sampled only one episode of, and that would be Get a Robo Arc, Episode 1, The Demon on High, which, story-wise, I have no problem with.
Nope, it's good. It's fine.
No, that's fine. Again, I thought the CG robots looked pretty good.
I thought the CG robots looked pretty good. I didn't think they were moving in any sort of interesting manner.
They were an action figure held up and just wiggled around.
It's how they interact with everything around them. You don't feel like it's really landing. You don't feel like it's really
But that also goes for the 2D animation.
Yeah.
It's basically a motion comic.
Yeah,
I would say,
and, which would be fine if, I guess, if they were working from like original material. But it's how are they off model in there if they're still pictures?
You get kind of like, you know, like kind of really exaggerated poses and faces. You know, this is from Ken Ishikawa comic after all. Like, you know, expressions there. I don't know whether they use that as kind of license to have a kind of move between different designs in a single shot, but I don't know. I don't think they're quite getting away with it. I think they are. It's just an unfortunate nature of what's going on here.
Anyway, two lads. Weirdly, it plays the same scene twice in the episode, which threw me a bit on timing because the opening scene happens actually later in the episode. They try to get into the lab because of a flashback where some Americans showed up at a martial arts school. They fail to get in because the guards threaten to shoot them. And so they go to the convenience store where they buy a rice bun and a can of Coke because that's all they can afford. But then they get into a fight with some hoodlums and take a motorcycle and sidecar.
They're instantly, these two guys are recognized as children by every person in the show. And I'm just like, are you sure? I think that's a short, powerful man. I think that's a large, powerful man.
Nope, that's fucking Takuma Nagare, 15 years old, first year in high school.
They take... I couldn't tell whether the motorcycle and sidecar from the guys they'd rescued at the convenience store.
It's the dudes they beat up. By, right. And of course, they do the opposite way around, where like you got the big sidecar and the comparatively smaller bike. Of course, the big dude is driving the motorcycle while the little dude is just kicking his heels up in the sidecar.
So they drive to a trash island because the big dude, he's used his predictive abilities to determine that a Get a Robo will fall here in the future. But the people who live on the trash island think they've come to steal their valuable trash, and they're like, hey guys, no, we're just waiting for something, and you should move away from this area because you're at risk of getting killed.
So because these guys are reasonable and they're trying to protect their literal trash pile, it's like, well, I won't beat the shit out of and possibly murder these people like I did back at the shop. I'll just let them kick the shit out of me until, you know, the Get a Robo falls out of the sky.
So the Get a Robo falls out of the sky, and they're like, ho-ho, now we can hack into the Get a Robo. You can get in. Meanwhile, back at the lab, Jin? I can't remember which
one. Jin.
Hayata. He's like, oh, all the scientists are like, there's somebody in there, but he hasn't got the suit on. It's going to tear him apart. Like, what's your name, kid? And he gives him his name, and they're like, oh, and then all of a sudden he's like, ha-ha, no, you can, because you're my mate's son.
You are my boy.
Yes.
You are a child, blessed but again a raise.
I guess if it was just him saying it, the other scientist is like, no, abort, abort, but there's another mad scientist with some implants in his head that is just like, yeah, this guy's cool.
Yes, he's the one surviving of the original scientists.
So it's been signed off by two of them, so it's fine. Yeah.
Two insane people have signed off on this child piloting the robot. And what's more, they weren't going to send out and get a RoboArk because they've only got one pilot, and of course it needs three. But hey, there's a second one here, so now it's worth sending out to get a RoboArk. So, fella, I can't remember his name now.
Takia Nagare is a short dude.
Yeah. The guy who turns out to be half dinosaur.
Called Kamui.
Yes. You go out there, we get a RoboArk. And yeah, they team up and they defeat the monster, which is basically a giant egg with a torso on top of it and tentacles on the bottom of it.
It makes noises like a Geiger counter.
I did like that. I think that was my favourite touch of the entire. I think.
Yeah, no, sound design was.
Because it felt like, oh, I think it was like when the Geta Ray weaponry is going against it, then it starts making larger Geiger counter noises, which I thought was a really good bit of sound design. They team up by tearing it apart and then firing Geta beams into the hole they've torn in it.
Mm.
And, they meet up and he's like, oh, this guy is half dinosaur. What's up with his face?
They did that very slow reveal, but they've done the thing where the intro's on the first episode, so you can see he's a dinosaur in the intro. Kind of defeats the purpose there, guys, but okay.
Story-wise, it's fine, but I was left with a feeling of, like, I probably could... It'd be more dynamic reading the comic.
Yeah. No, it didn't put me off the premise or the look of it or anything, but like the actual animation, for lack of a better term, like it's not doing a fucking great job of being of kind of drawing you into it itself. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the only reason you can't be wanting to watching is that the original manga was only like a couple of volumes. It was less than finished before Ken Ishikawa passed away, so I think it's the intent here to give it some kind of an ending or continuance of it.
Yeah, from the opening credits it looks like they're probably going to go back to whichever one it is, the previous one to this,
Get a Robo Go,
yeah, and recap the events of that.
Yeah.
Because I think they'll have to do that to explain why there's a half dinosaur man on the same side as the humans.
And then it's all over the place because you got like the Get a Robo anime, but I think it'd be going to be going from the Get a Robo manga, which is like spun off into its own kind of little storyline independent of the TV anime. And then you got fucking Get a Robo Armageddon and Shin Get a Present New Get a mix in that mix as well. So it gets all tangled up very quickly. Just the only thing we're going to know, if you don't understand what's anything's happening, it's probably because Geta Ray did it.
Sure.
This was a disappointment.
And you know, this is how the stuff, everyone, Jun Kawagoe, I directed it again. Actually, fucking one of the studios is that the studio did the fucking Shin Geta Ray's New Geta OVA, but I know, it seems all. A bit muddled up, a bit underserved, for sure.
But at the same time, you can probably feel guilty free of not worrying about people being overworked making this cartoon.
True, yeah.
Unless this is a product of overwork, in which case, yeah, you can see it.
I think it's more so that you couldn't get, but probably because a lot of other studios and companies are already crushed and underworked to begin with, and we have to cobble together all these lads. And outside of us, a few creative people who is really giving a hoot about Get a Robo on a wide scale nowadays, probably isn't that many. So probably could have been a struggle to generate interest, then bring in funding and resources that we need to get it going off.
But from the little interaction I've had with Get a Robo fans on Twitter this past week or so, this seems to be what they want.
Oh.
That's what I mean, man. I want to see if they can put a button on the story that they've probably pored over dozens of times. I haven't seen an ending for.
No, they were their thing. They were telling me they really like the fact that it's almost shot for shot out of the comics, and there's YouTube videos showing you this.
Okay.
I just wish there was some in between stuff to link up those panels. because there's particularly with, I didn't say what must be a dialogue heavy panel. Sometimes it could be just a bare, almost a still image, bar mouth flaps, or like some sort of background moving behind them as if to indicate that they're running.
Oh man, there's one shot when they're walking down the hill for us to Combini, and it's like they're just like jostling the two lads up and down. You can't see their feet, and then like the background has been slowly kind of drawn back into the distance behind them.
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly the shot I was thinking of. Anyway, this is going to give me time to watch Great Pretender next week.
Hey, way ahead, yeah. I was in the middle of actually looking at old Get a Robo stuff. I was in the middle of Get a Robo Armageddon before this came along. I think I'll go back to that.
Then we've got the first two episodes of I, Tsushima web animation, which I can't remember the contents of. They both came across much more as like an advert for the comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the first one is just literally, hi, I'm Tsushima, the cat, and this is my owner. And we're going to be in an anime. Whoa! And it's just them talking about the show.
It's like an action anime they were talking about.
He's trying to pitch it as an action anime. And it's like, it's not an action anime. We're in a different show that's an action anime. You're getting mixed up.
Yeah. So I don't think we need to talk about them every week. But we do need to talk about I, Tsushima Episode 2.
Mm.
Not quite out of the gates, but second episode, let's give you a gut punch about an old man dying.
A very special episode of I, Tsushima.
What is it with these cute fucking pet shows that are great and very short, but manage to just fucking hit my emotions so fucking hard? Oh, I'd be frustrated if it wasn't so fucking good at its job.
It's like disclaimer up front, your pets will die someday.
Pets are cute, but they will die.
And also their owners sometimes.
Yes, I was going to say, there's a disclaimer for the pets watching that your owner may die.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically opens with Tsushima like scarfing down food, and he's explaining that because he's from the streets, he's going to eat when he gets a chance to eat.
He's explaining to Big Mom that this is how he lives his life. Yes. And let me tell you a story about one time I shat in this old guy's garden. And he took a shine to me.
It was the start of a beautiful friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Gave him his name, invited him in, but yeah, that telltale cough that the old man's got, you think that's not long for this world in an anime with that sort of cough.
One day the old man, he just didn't wake up, he didn't open his eyes.
Yes. I mean, somebody in the comments was pointing out that the eye movement that Tsushima's doing as he's watching him is like a thing cats do to show affection.
Hmm. Oh, it's like they're trying to look at you without making eye contact, because that's not insulting to a cat. It's predatory, so they don't like being looked at or looking at people. Yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah. And then, then we see like the house being destroyed, but the cat keeps on coming back. And there's no old man to take care of him.
Yeah, and he's like, his story is just like, it sounds like he's being a tough guy. It's like, people go, places go, and you don't have any food no more. That's why living on the streets is tough, man. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, but you kept coming back. Like,
so, the heartache, man. That's what I said. Really. The physical pain, the pain in your heart.
I guess that was I do remember the second web animation, because I guess it relates to this one, where everyone keeps calling him boss, because they see a big fat cat.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Look at that fat cat. Boss. And he's actually really cuddly, despite his personality.
Yes. Okay, I did like that one, yes.
That does relate to this one, where it's just like, yeah, he seems tough, and he's on the streets. And it's like, yeah, but you kept coming back to the house, even when it just got completely torn down. Just in case the old man came back. It's a real feel thing that hits you in under 2 minutes. So good job.
Yes. Still does not beat Kurodeko, which has the punch to the gut in the very first episode. The very first episode's about a cat dying.
I want a gut punch now. Just gotta top that. It's right there in the first 5 seconds of the opening. They all die immediately.
I'm trying to remember now who played the big black cat in. It was two different people played the brown bear cat in Chi Sweet Home. Because that's kind of a little bit of what he reminds me of. But he does, I guess Ishira has like more of an old man vibe to himself. Then, next on the docket is Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, Episode 39, The Landing of Sovereign Rock Castle. Well, Dai, making a sword is a lot like making love to a beautiful woman.
You have to stay in the room the whole time.
Yeah. And hold hands for 12 watch. Hours.
You gotta be there for the labor, you gotta be there for the birth. No, you gonna be with us all the way, kid.
they're literally holding hands. Well, first of all, the king shows up and Dai says, "Can we make that crown you gave us into a sword?" And he's like, "It's your crown, mate. You can do whatever you like with it."
Again, the dad was like, "Dad, can we use this?" It's like, "Yeah, I gave it to you. It's yours. I gave it to you for your birthday. Go on, go nuts." Just the way they keep zooming on, and Pop's just like, "Give me a fucking minute," just lying down on the ground. I've teleported so many places today.
Everyone's used to it now. That says, "Oh, here's Pop. Everyone, get the guy out of the way. Step back. He's not done the landings yet."
They've normalized fast travel. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, they're looking through the window. Are they still holding hands? They've been doing it for 12 hours. But yes, the reason he's doing this is because he's making a sword. In the past, weapons and people were connected, and so
weapon and people were the same thing.
Yes,
but people want to get strong like weapons, so they got stronger. So weapons have to step up as well. So you need that connection. Otherwise, it's just a magic sword. What's the fucking point?
So that's why he's learning Dai's hand by holding onto it for so long. Meanwhile,
I hope Dai's one of those protagonists that never grows, because he's probably a growing boy, and it'll probably outgrow the sword pretty quick then, right?
Well, it's only got. I'm sure they're hoping that they can restore peace to the land before he's aged another year. So,
okay,
this will never happen again. There's never been any sequels to the Dragon Quest games. It's like defeat the evil monsters, and it was done. No more sequels.
Nope. It definitely was a Final Fantasy.
Meanwhile, back at the coast, another king showed up, and Leona's like, "Oh, I told them to come in stealthily. He's coming like in a big, massive, ostentatious ship. He's bringing these weird vehicles off it. And they're like, stand back, lads. I'm here with my tanks. Worry no more." I assume there was probably some anti-crocodile racism which got cut out for time, because there's a scene later with the general from this country where crocodile like leaps to save him, and I was like, and his reaction made me think he'd been rude to crocodile earlier, but he never really was.
It was kind of like your man threw him a dirty glance.
Yes.
And they were both guarding outside the door but not talking, and it's just like, we're here to stop the Dark Army. Aren't you a general of the Dark Army and a giant crocodile monster? It's like, that's right, I am.
It could be a little bit of that. It could be as well that we got a plan. We got to come together to defeat Emperor Vern. And this guy rolls up, ignoring the plan, just saying, "I'll take care of business. You guys just watch me." He's like, "Motherfucker." And the bodyguards just turn around, gives him the look at the right phone, saying, "I know, man." It's like, yeah, I've worked for some shitheads in my time as well. I know what it feels like, so I can't let you die.
It could be a bit of a bromance thing, because Crocodile does say, it's like, that guy had a warrior's heart. I have to save him before jumping in with a Mr. President to get him out of the way. But that guy's being a real prick. He's like, obviously you guys called me here to save you all. Don't worry, I'll fucking take care of it with my tanks and my battleships. And we're past the age of swords and sorcery, I think he says. Or something like that. Yeah.
As he's making his boasts, though, a big beam just cuts his boat in half.
Nice punctuation. I like it.
Yeah, because I was like, I know he's getting shown up. I was not expecting him to get shown up while that speech was still happening.
Very efficient. Yeah.
We also get a proper look at General Balaam, who was talked about in the last episode. He's the one guy who escaped. I can't remember what his kingdom. One of the North Kingdoms. And he's like, "Yeah, mate, we thought we were the kingdom, the fortress kingdom.
Fortress kingdom.
They fucked us up."
Yeah. And we see that the thing which has arrived is Sovereign Rock Castle, a giant rock monster. It reminded me of the Torquemada from Nemesis in 80s 2000 AD, and also Picker from One Piece.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's probably what he was inspired by. Yes. What if that thing had a dumb fucking voice? Yeah. That would be funny.
I was checking actually, this is like, you know, because we're bored talking about Japanese role playing games here, and in Final Fantasy you got like Alexander, but it's a big robot that's like half a castle. And that turned up in Final Fantasy VI. I was like, oh well, no. This Dragon Quest Adventure of Dryton was like a year before, because when they blow off, when they blow off the Roskin, it's a castle fucking robot dude with cannons all over him, and saying, huh, maybe I might have picked up a little thing or two reading the funny pictures. Yeah.
It's a cool look, because obviously, you know, your man's like, he won't stop my tanks, which are just like horse-drawn tanks, but...
It's a chariot with a cannon on it.
Yeah, pretty much. But, it just blows the rocks off the actual thing, which is a magic castle underneath there. It's a magic castle mech, not a magic mountain mech.
I mean, like how it's laid out as well, was that like the steps that go up to like where the head is, and the head's like, no, they have the pavilion, and like the pillars of it form like the fucking Mazinger Z style, like grating for the mouth would be. It's a cool little thing. So, you know, when they get inside, they can like just run around inside that place. It looks pretty cool.
And Miss Vern has him on loudspeaker, so, you know, he can really rub it in.
Yeah, and he was able to sneak up on them because he was using his mist powers.
I like the crocodile. I was like, how the fuck did you guards not see this thing coming up on us? And it's like, it's really misty. look around.
Yes. Mist. That could only be Flazer. No, Mist Vern.
The old man has repaired Crocodile's axe. And now he has the strength of 100 men, and he's like, no, 1,000. I do like their friendship, the old man and Crocodile.
Yeah. The Crocodile has a newfound respect for humans and maybe a boyfriend? Oh, that'd be nice.
Dai wants to come along and help, but he's told, he's no, gotta hold on to that sword. Stay and watch the sword be made. You shouldn't run off when your child's being born. So Pop makes a big speech, and he's like, oh, and then wanders off to say, oh my goodness, now I've made that speech, I can't back out of this.
He forgets how brave he is sometimes.
So
they'll go and slow down the Dark Army while Dai's getting his sword finished handheld.
I think that's, the final thing is the rocks falling off, and he's like, Mist Vern's like, ha 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 ha, I didn't have to reveal it myself.
Sweet ride.
I think Pop says it like, it's like, oh, here it comes. He's going to say surrender or die. And it's like, here are my terms. Die. Everybody die. That's my terms.
Dang. Hard sell.
I'll take it.
this felt like a bit, last week's episode looked a bit rough. This one felt, it was back to its normal standard.
I feel like if this show ever takes a dip, it'll probably like pick it up next fucking episode.
Yeah.
Like it's literally just like, yeah, we got to save it for the cool shit next time.
Looks like they will, because everyone getting stuck in. Hyunkle's getting into the fray as well.
Yeah.
So all the gang are back to smash up some possessed suits of armor.
And now onto a thing I stopped watching part of the way through the episode. My Hero Academia, episode 103, One Thing at a Time. Now, I can't remember if we discussed this on the podcast or after the podcast. But we try to think, have they rearranged the order of these things? And this was the episode which confirmed to me, yes, they have rearranged the order of these things.
Yeah, it's basically the episode is, let me remind you of the shit that's happened so we can catch you up / rearrange it.
I.e. there's a massive bit of the plot they've not shown us yet. And are they going to show you it? I think they are.
They blatantly just like swish right by it, don't they? But I'm almost certain I've seen promo images they're going to do like My Villain Academia.
They must do, because there's a character who they've cast, and there's promo images, and where they currently are in the story, I don't believe they're currently alive in the comic version of the story, so they must be going back and recapping that. But And I think in the comic, the My Villain Academia is like, this happened like months ago anyway, so maybe they've just they've moved it somewhere out. Anyway, it was doing my head in, and I was like, okay, this is the time I'm stopping watching My Hero Academia, because somehow, me knowing what's going to happen has made it incredibly a confusing watch. And I don't know whether it's confusing if you haven't read the manga, but if you've read the comic, it's just really confusing me now.
Is it just you're confused as to where we're at in the timeline or what has been rearranged?
And also because because the next episode is just leaping straight into filler.
Yeah.
Like, I nearly swear that they were trying to do the My Villain Academia kind of thing as its own season, or because I figured, oh, the second half is going to be that. Yeah, sure. Or they're going to do it as a film or like a, not an OVA or something, but like a thing. I don't know why they wouldn't just like,
Way too much in there for them to not like put that out on TV. You know, there's way too much.
Yeah, it's a weird choice so far.
It's really fucking really important for getting it's gonna have fun deliver on this in the end. That's a comic isn't finished yet, but it's like it really is what I needed there to try and like show you that. Is most villains are just people who have been discarded by society because they are, you know, a little bit mentally ill, or they are poor, or they are fucking somewhat away disenfranchised. And so
or when there's a disparity based on powers. Yeah. When there's a disparity based on superhuman powers and your power doesn't really have a good guy function, then you're kind of like, yeah, you're automatically fucked based on how society is regulated. It does a good job of doing that. And if you're going to skip by, it's like, are they just trying to make the baddies into like generic Cobra guys? Because like, we're just scheming bastards for no real good reason.
They can't not do that.
It would seem to miss the point of at least the comic, if not the show, if the show is trying to do something different.
Yeah, it's just really, because in the comic, I believe it's them facing off them getting their licenses. Yeah. And then facing those villains as they're being driven on the way home from All Might. Mm. And then I think it goes straight into the Liberation Front stuff.
Yeah.
And then all the stuff with Endeavor and joining their agency is after My Villain Academia.
Was it this just jumped in the middle where okay lads, this is how it's going to be. You're going to be like psychic about me for like a couple of months, and you're going to figure out how to like do your powers, right? Even thinking about it, and then it's like, well, all that was going on, here's what's going on with the villains.
But first it's, here's what's going on with other members of the class in like side story stuff. Like you said, filler.
Like, and it's like, oh, Hawks is taking orders from this mysterious council, which is clearly made up of a load of the League of Villains. Mm. So are we supposed to be like, oh, what's going on there? But then why bother hiding their faces? Because they're clearly who they are. They don't even bother with Twice.
they say their names out loud. It's like, what are you thinking about the plan? Oh, I think we should go kill all humans. Yeah, it sounds great.
And the new characters are all in shadow as well. When in the comic, they're just like introduced and here they are.
Here they are. It's a guy. He looks a bit weird. We don't know what his fucking deal is. So me revealing his entire fucking face makes no difference at this stage. Yeah. It's the reveal of his powers that would be the interesting thing.
So I guess I've now got strange. Time to watch two episodes of Great Pretender each week. Because it's just did by Edin.
Yeah.
And you watch next week anyway, best be sure.
Yeah, because Selk is back. So I guess I must have watched all the way through. I just did not retain what happened in it.
Like, not much fucking happens. It's just like, I'm back ago and here's my story and here's where I am up to this point in the story as a character in terms of my growth. And, you know, it just does that several times for lots of different people while not much animation happens. Yeah,
it is. This film, I the beauty contest, why should you be the next symbol of peace? Well, I think I could be a great role model. So all that kind of spiel. It did feel a lot like, no, maybe they do some of that about how they can think about different ways to apply their superpowers. Like Bakugo, he has one thing going on, but like an Ender. They get short old idea, like, why I'm doing Iceman sliding around, I can put like a jet of fire and go faster. Oh, okay. My dad's a piece of shit, but he's a real professional and he's oddly good at kind of conveying these concepts to us, so he could be a good teacher. Better than All Might, but that's not a high bar to disparage by any means.
Yeah, they did the joke with Midoriya where he spends far too long and they even put the text up on the screen and it's just like, oh, Endeavor and understands that. It's like, yeah, let me just break that down to the essentials.
They make fun of that and then they all do it too about their dumb powers, so fuck whatever.
I would if they're aiming to fit in a filler episode to tie into the new movie.
Oh, are they being? Is their timing being messed up by movie schedule? Yeah, that would have product. Yeah, yeah.
Because that's out soon in Japan, I think. Where they introduce a load of international heroes. Anyway, moving on to happier things. Case closed. Sorry, Detective Conan, episode 10-11. Picking Wild Plants and Clovers, Part 1, in which a slight change of format, we see who did it.
We get the fucking Columbo setup.
Yes.
I love it.
Okay.
So this woman has... she's blindfolded her boyfriend.
And she's taken him to a mansion that she bought him, and he's like, oh, I'm excited to see it, honey. Oh, wait till you see it, honey. And he's like... hey, wait. And she's like, yeah, that's right. It's the house you bought for your mistress. And now, stabbing.
Yes.
My gosh.
Run credits. And the kids are the Detective Boys Club and their two teachers are on their way.
Isn't like a practice field trip?
A practice field trip, yes. Because they're going to take both first years and second years on this field trip. So they want to do a practice first. And they're met by the murderer, who's also a teacher.
When I saw that, I was like, wait, isn't that the same woman? It's like, yes. She has the same hair. It's like, yeah, it was the same woman. She just didn't look as evil.
Everybody get into the car. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got loads of cardboard boxes in the car. Can you put them up against the windows? And I was
create significant blocking. And I was like, okay. I mean, like, it seems reasonable because she said, hey, this is my last job. I've already quit teaching, as you can see by my ring on my finger. I am engaged. I'm going to get married, so I'm retiring from teaching. So this is the last job I'm doing for it. That's why I have all these boxes in the car, because I was packing up and moving in with my new spouse. And it's like, all very reasonable, but very unsafe way of driving into the countryside with a minivan full of kids.
Yes, that's what I was just horrified as a as a very safety-minded individual. I was like... I've said that, and then you're like, well, she's already murdered somebody. So.
Yeah, no. But I mean, like, I've moved and done very stupid things in cars, including, like, holding things onto the top of a car with either arm out the side of a window. That was a very bad idea. Don't do that. But I'm not a teacher put in charge of children who could be put in jail for fucking that up.
So she's called Zenda. I don't know if that's going to be... play a part, whether the doubles are going to play a part of it somehow, whether that's a Prisoner of Zenda reference.
Yeah, of course.
They're all going round picking these wildflowers, and your big lad gets thirsty, so Zenda and I forget the little girl's name.
The little girl who's actually a little girl.
Yes, the little girl who's actually a little girl, not the little girl who's actually an 18-year-old wrong woman.
Wait, she's 18? I thought she was like 40 or something.
No, she's only 18.
Okay.
It's the mother of the Nancy Drew type, who's the little girl who's a 40-year-old woman.
She must be older than 40.
She's probably in her 50s, given the age of the oldest son. Yeah, so they go and get the water, and then what does she say she's dropped?
She's dropped her earring.
That's it. She's dropped one of her earrings. So can you help me look for it?
Yeah.
So they go looking for it.
Off when I opened the van. Yeah.
Everyone else is like, "Oh, where have they got to? Let's go and find out." And then when they get there, they see on the opposite end of the.
No, before they get there, the two kids are like blood.
Yes.
Whoa.
Like, that was one of the bits that, like you were saying, these kids are fucked up. But at least that was Detective Conan and stuff. They recognized blood by scent.
Yeah, it's you're the kid who's like, the bodies start smelling after 2 days in warm weather and 4 days in cold weather. So the body's like at the end of the van.
Just at the back of it, slumped against the tree that they're parked next to. Mm. They can see drag marks through the woods.
So, and because they're in the Gunma Prefecture, they have to call in the most obnoxious detective who they know. Which allows the entire episode to be a Urasaitsura reunion. Because you've got the suspicious teacher being played by Fumi Hirano, and I can never remember the guy's name, but the guy who played Ataru.
Boshio Furukawa.
That's him. He's playing the obnoxious policeman.
Hmm. They do get some interaction where he's like, "You seem to know a lot about corpses, lady." He's like, "I was watching that cool drama on TV." And he's like, "Oh, I fucking love that one, yeah."
Well, the cool drama where the wife electrocutes her husband, and we see a little shot of it, and it's just love electrocuting a Terry.
Very good stuff.
At one point, when they're all chatting, Karen goes, "You're a sight, sir." It's part of his dialogue. It wanted them all to shut up.
well, just like good yada yada, has it? But you would say yes.
Yeah, apparently, people say all these references were in the manga as well. So these are all like, I already know who's playing these characters, so I can write these references into the comic in order to make the Urasaitsura reunion happen in the anime.
Years down the line.
Yeah.
dear.
And I love the fact that everyone hates this cop. He's probably right about every single thing he's saying.
Yeah, he's not bad at his job. He's just he's a dick about it. Yes.
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, I think you did it." Instantly thinks she did it. Not really based on any evidence.
She's like, "Oh no, my fiance, he's dead. This is terrible." And they kind of check his pockets. It's like, he has a bunch of different business cards. And he's like, "Oh, he was a con man." She's like, "Oh no."
Yes.
He's like, "Okay, that would be a good reason to murder him."
Yeah. It turns out he's wanted for marriage fraud in various parts of the country. And so the clues you've got are the dirt on her arms is weird. One arm makes sense. The other arm does not make sense.
It's on like her fingernails from like searching through the ground for an earring, but it's like gone up the length of her sleeve on her right arm or something. Yeah.
There's some drag marks behind the body. So it looks like someone's dragged him and put him against this tree. And your little girl had found a four-leaf clover when she was looking for the earring, but now she can't find the four-leaf clover when they go back.
Yeah, she said, "Oh, four-leaf clover, that's good luck. I could give it to her, I'd give it to the teacher because she lost her earring, and now she really wants to get it because it's like, well, her fucking fiance died. She needs some good luck." And the other bit was there was like one other thing. Oh, they obviously blocked off the shot in the van, but they took a picture beforehand. Like, it's like, "Oh, let's take a picture to commemorate the trip." And they've taken a picture with clearly the back of the van in shot. Back of the thing in shot. And there's no guy leaning up against the tree there. And they got, even the detective's like, "All these trees look the fucking same anyway."
Yes. I'm wondering, like, did she just take the handbrake off or something and roll it slightly?
Yeah, like it was just put off park and then just sort of like, "Would you go over there and look for my earring?" And she's like, shove car slightly down while revealing body that's up against behind the car, basically, where it was parked. Yeah.
But as well as all that, there's advancement of other plots, as Wakada Sensei, when thinking about a good look charm, has a flashback to I can't remember his name. He's a shogi player. He's like the non-blood brother to the other shogi player who was murdered many moons ago. And there was a clue which said Asuka Rum at the crime scene, and that was reinterpreted recently to figure out who's in charge of the black organization. That guy who'd be 120 years old if he was alive. But then she's thinking about this and the lucky shogi piece. And then she holds her eye and Kona's like, "She's got a poorly eye." Makes her a suspect for being rum.
If she has a glass eye, yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah. So it's a lot like the last Canon arc, where it's like we go on an adventure, and one of the suspects for being Rum is on the adventure with us, and seems to know a little too much about things they shouldn't know, given their job as A, a chef, or B, a primary school teacher.
At least she has a good reason to be here, as opposed to, hey, you want to bring our sushi chef on our trip? Yeah, fuck it, why not?
Kindergarten cop who's kindergarten criminal.
Yeah, and it's clear from the preview next week is that the cop is getting drugged and used as a dummy for Conan to reveal who did the murder. Or rather.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting as like a how done it rather than a who done it for a change.
Yeah. Like, it's clear that she's setting this up to give her an alibi to have not done it. But, like, other than that, it seems like a very bad plan. But, yeah, it's just trying to put together the particulars of not why she did it. We know why, but, like you said, the particulars of how.
Yeah. It's the change of pace I really appreciated more than anything. Then we've got Welcome to Demon School, Irumakun, Episode 13, Walter Park.
Ooh, some topical social satire here from Irumakun. Let's build a theme park on top of a prison for demons.
Yes. So, yeah, that's the gist of it is the first half is the kids go there. Everybody's gone apart from your lion-headed guy who's at a conference with the teacher he got on well with when they were collecting the signatures.
Are they just going out now? What is going on there?
No. Everyone at the conference is really good talk. They're all like...
They're all really into it, yeah.
And of course, the one character who has never had a line yet in the show.
He had plans that weekend.
The kids are slightly disappointed because they have some chaperones, because yes. Grandpa insisted that it's Ruma's first time out in the big wide world, so we have to send the two, like, most, not powerful, but the two highest ranked teachers and my butler on the on this thing. But all the kids are like, there's going to be a buzzkill. So how did they end up making the contest? I can't remember.
We've got to decide who has the most fun. And then, like, you know, if you're going to be around, you know, if you're going to tolerate your presence, you know, since the kids and not so many words, you got to make it, like, fun for us. So we're going to have a conversation say who has the most fun. Also, kind of help divide it up so that, you know, we have like one chaperone, like kind of tailing actress at a time.
Yeah, because they all want to go on different rides, I think is the main problem.
Even though, as well, like, you know, Balam and Opera are fun, saying, yeah, fine, it sounds great. And like, Kanego's going, no, it's going to be structured fun. And fun saying, lads, come on, let them off, kids. Fun saying, yeah, I'm Opera Senpai, I can fuck you up, you know that, right? Fun saying, I keep being overruled, it's so unfair. We wish we're back at school.
Also, Abra is there because she thought she'd been invited on a date. Which was...
You said it'd be just the two of us. It's like, no, I didn't. She checked his test. You want to come to the theme park? Damn, he didn't say that. Shit. And she's bothered by the drawing lots. She ends up on not Aruma's team and on Clara's team, and it's just on the it's the girl team except for Opera, and just like, I gotta watch out for her. She is a girl. I do know this now.
As you know, Clara's a girl.
It's funny, yeah.
But yeah, their idea of fun is they're just going to dress Amory up like some giant doll.
That's been fine, because Carolee would have to sneak off partway too, because she's got a fucking concert later on.
I did like the, it's like, oh, I wonder if the mysterious trio will show up, and Aruma's like, they probably won't. And Clara's like, they won't? Oh, okay.
She's already pulling the costume out of her magic pocket.
Whoops, yeah. dear.
And so we run into Renove, who's in part of the parade. It turns out his dad designed this theme park where all...
I want Legend Daddy to become a normal word. Yes. I fucking love that word.
it
made me laugh so much, man. It's great.
I was like, we see like the statue of the dad, and I'm like... I was half in a mind of like, is it better that I just imagine how weird he is from the statue, or do I want to meet that dad?
It's a tough call. You know, it's probably going to be a very funny, weird dad.
I appreciate the top brace and the arrow. This is that statue. It's in that pose. You know what this is.
Yeah.
And so the park, it turns out, this is a thing, he's just so boastful, this is information he should not be giving away.
Because they're like, what ride are we going to go on? Aruma hasn't decided, so his boy is going like, I'm going to go with whatever Aruma goes with. And the guy just wants to go to the king's ride or something like that.
Yes.
But he's like, oh, don't worry, I'll take you on the super special tour of the secret underground prison. It's like, what? That does not sound like a theme park.
Yep, we keep them there and torment them, and their anguish helps power the theme park above, bright electricity and everything. That's pretty good.
Their sorrow, like, it's actual electricity for your joy. It's perfect. It's a perfect system.
And that's because you didn't get what get it or cuts between like them going like, ah, and then to the, oh, what a costume character, welcome to the happy kingdom of dreams. Like, oh, it's built upon lies. Your kingdom is a sham.
I think my favorite is the mascot, which is just a vibrating heart.
We've seen that thing before, or do you see these early on have a lot more kind of weird creatures popping out of the walls or in the background?
Even the thing that opens the park is like this squawking bird thing, and I guess it would be cute if it wasn't the fact that he just like screams, "The park is open!" kind of shit. Yeah.
It's been like the school bell. The school is no lunchtime.
Normalized weirdness.
So they're being guided around by a guy called Wet, I think, or not Wet. They give him a different. They give him his Japanese name in the. In the subtitles. Yeah, it's a weird thing where sometimes the Wikipedia has got they've translated the name into an English name, and the subtitles haven't, and sometimes it's the other way around. It's quite weird.
My name is Shining Diamond.
Yes. Yeah, he's the one showing them around. And then we check into the prison where we find Prisoner 1313, which is...
The double unlucky.
Ami Kirio.
He's in for 2 years for trying to blow up a school. That seems like a really light sentence.
Well, it is the underworld. You know, some of this is just no expective demon rambunctiousness.
I guess like he does get a nosebleed trying to, because he's, as we know, he has very little magic power, so he has to be taken off to the nurse's office. But they do have a part of the prison where they let demons run wild when they're in their wild cycle, which is useful for them because the guards don't come there to check him out for their evil plans.
Yes, they drag him and another guy off that way, and they think, oh, he's like the other guy is like our point of view character for the prison.
Yeah,
he's the fish.
Yeah. And it turns out, oh, that's not what's going on here. It's actually a place where demons are plotting to do a jailbreak.
And if they're demons and they're in jail and they're plotting, you know what they're plotting? Jailbreak. Yeah. And he's like, I did like the way he's like, he was scared of them. And they just say that, and he's like, oh, that's a great idea. We should totally do that.
Even when they bring him in, they seem super sound. You know, even the big mammoth looking dude. So it's like, oh, one big dude, hang on to this guy. He's obviously in a bad state. So you just like hold on to him and cuddle him to you till he's like revives himself. It's like, oh, yes, I'll do that. You guys are all right. Let's get out of here.
We're breaking out today. Like, we're telling you about this plan now, so it couldn't have been spilled, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Also, it nicely coincides with Iruma's visits.
Whoa, wherever he goes, there's lots of commotion that's sure to follow.
And this is like the first day of his holiday, isn't it?
It is, yeah, I think so.
God damn.
I do like... Kamui's outfit for going to the park, though. He's this owl in a little suit and top hat.
Overdressed.
Definitely. Yeah. I dressed down. Like, she looks like a fucking an exotic dancer at school, but she's just like a very sensible one piece dress.
I feel like he probably dressed up like that because it's like, if it was done over here, he'd be wearing like a fedora and that kind of shit. It's like, oh, I'll dress up to impress the ladies, that kind of thing. Because he's still being a creep, obviously. Yes. Staring so hard, his eyes go weird.
Yeah. But this is a lot of fun, and this is the start of the big arc for this season.
Shenanigans. And because they've been split into little individual groups, they get like much more kind of this. Here's this little like episode we're gonna like, you know, be with the girl squad, and we're gonna see everybody get their little moment in there, rather than having to fight for screen time amongst everybody else. And you know what? Just like bring in Balam and then just not use him. Is we got to find a way to bring him in here. Like, why wouldn't you not have him in every scene? Everyone's asking at every moment, where's Balam?
Yeah, well, judging by this episode, he's patting that cloud that your fella sleeps in.
On the preview, this one got me like all like pumped up because you get to see what Agar is, what's under that eye mask. Is he always asleep? Let's find out.
Yeah, it's going to try to remember who's in their group because yeah, it's Alice, Iruma, Sabnock, and that fella. Which again is a different setup of people. It's like you're taking Clara away from those two and added some extra people in.
Like, we need a different idiot. Sabnock. Perfect. Okay, that'll do.
I must actually check back to see these things, because I think there was at least one, if not two, shots in this for Sabnock being, like, 10 feet tall. I think he's been cut off, like, at the top of the frame.
There was a great panning shot of them all reacting to the theme park, and you have Iruma, and then you have Amory, like, just, like, her waist, because she's just cut off, because she's, like, so much fucking taller than Iruma. Yeah, the size difference is very funny. Yeah,
I was surprised like how high up on the Crunchyroll popularity pages it is now as well.
Oh, excellent! I'm glad to hear it because it's a fun show.
I saw a thing there, a little image of how the various Shogakukan like manga magazines are doing. You know, how Shonen Jump on, and one of the Rumikon is in. Like Rumikon is like ranking pretty high. He's doing pretty good for itself. It's probably off the back of this being on telly, I'd say.
Yeah, that would help a lot. Sure.
Well, I think there must have been enough of like an embedded and entrenched interest in it to get it on TV in the first place. So good. One hand washes the other.
Righty-ho, that is everything, unless there's anything else you want to talk about. Niall, did you want to talk about any Predicures?
I have not opportunity to catch up. I had a stressful week last week, but I might find some time in it now. And they got a movie coming out, so maybe I better get up to speed before that happens. It won't be for months, but anyways.
Yeah. I will recommend episode 18 of Zenkaiger. It has a ridiculous attack where they force somebody to relive the traumatic ending of another Sentai series as an attack after the monster makes everybody fall in love with each other, which seemed to be a way for them to just like, oh, we can't actually make these characters gay, but we can make them gay in this episode.
The next best thing.
Except your main character who falls in love with an ice cream sundae because they're trying to avoid him falling in love with his gran. There's also this ongoing plot with your guy who's like a half robot, half human, where I'm not quite sure whether he's recognizing the grandmother, so I don't know whether he thinks that's his mum or whether she just looks like our hero's mum, and so they're going to end up being like half brothers. But yeah, he keeps on going back to the sweet shop and staring at her and staring at photos. So I assume he will eventually turn babyface or will just be further twisted by any emotional discoveries he finds about his missing mother. Because his dad is a tank.
In a literal, figurative sense, or both?
Both, yes. But yeah, it's highly enjoyable. Most people seem to enjoy it. There was a few people on Twitter who thought it was sacrilege to use that scene for comedy.
How dare they? How dare our satire satirize somebody? Because you're not allowed to have that any kind of fun over there.
Well, it's self parody, and I would say homage rather than parody. And
yeah,
and also yeah, they on the Toei Twitter was like, hey, you enjoyed that, kids? Why not watch the episode that it's referencing?
Yeah,
a guy get stabbed to death at the end of a Super Sentai series.
I mean, they get so few opportunities to actually do this kind of thing, just let them have it.
Yeah, well, I'll say a few opportunities every 5 years, I think.
That's the cycle, is it? Okay.
You're well, one guy's quote one joke.
I think it's 10 years. I think they did, yeah, I think it's on the, it was the last, so this is, what's this, is the 30, 45? This is the 45. They did it for the 35, which was the pirate one. I don't think they did it on the 10s. And Kamen Rider's only done it twice. It did it on Decade, which was on the 10, and then they did it for the Zio, which was the crossing over from Heisei to Rewa. Because they use that as, like, say, that's the end of the Heisei Riders, now we're on the Rewa Riders. That is our break on that point. So they don't do it too often. They take the opportunities where they can. Right, next week, I think we've got one more thing to add, which is Sunny Boy. Hey. Can't believe airs tomorrow.
Let's see, what's 15th or 16th? 16th? No. It airs this week, as of recording.
Yes, yeah. It airs this week. Nothing else has caught my fancy.
I'm going to be honest, you know, while we put it on ourselves, mostly out of enjoyment in still drop things, I'm not opposed to a little bit of a pressure release here. It's like, okay, I can get all this done in 2 evenings after work.
You guys were watching more stuff than I was this last season anyway.
I seen it like... been discussed lately of like people talking about some guy saying is like, I'm quitting anime, there's just too many things to keep up on. It's just like, you know, you can just not watch everything, right?
Yeah, that's, stop, man.
That is an option. Yeah. Like the reason, like last season was very busy, but like there was a lot of things I was really enjoying, so I didn't feel like stopping any of them. If I did feel it was overwhelming, fucking stop it. It's
there were things there that, let's say, this is continuing on from previous from spring, I want to try and like kind of watch it off. But then it's on as well, and I'm looking forward to this, so I gotta try and sort it out. And then it's like, okay, I should live it right now, I can't go on. And then you're like, you talk about 2 episodes of Odd Taxi and say, fuck it, I'm in for that too. Yeah, and that worked out, I'm happy it was. I think it was just one of those times where it was just by virtue of, because of obvious reasons, things got smushed together into the same release window.
There was good things last season that we missed out on. We skipped because it was just like, yeah, we got plenty of good things, you know?
That being said, I don't see anybody really going hell for leather about catching up on those things in the same way that people are going, I've got to catch up on Odd Taxi. Everyone's talking about Odd Taxi. We've got to catch up on Odd Taxi, where we can sit here smug going, day one Odd Taxi fans.
But you guys went all in and, I don't know, fucking wondering priority and I shat the bed on you.
dear.
Yeah.
Well, hey, things happen.
They do.
Can't see the future.
No, just and
make your best estimate.
It's a learning experience. I'm sure we've all watched plenty of crappy anime, and that's how we can recognise what are good and bad ones.
And be thankful for that, the embarrassment of riches that you have too many things you go on, and then like things that keep coming out that, you know, from the past that you were not able to access previously, which are just now the apparate into being into your very hands.
I mean, like if Get a Robo Arc becomes good, I guess it'll become good without us finding until after the fact, but I'm glad people are enjoying it. Yes. I'm glad it's fulfilling, like you say, that need, Niall, for it to be finished for the fans of it. Like that's great. It's just not for us, that's fine too.
Now, I may watch One Piece, because I did see a clip of this last episode, and it was absolutely
it's one of the
bananas.
Pretty ones. Yeah.
Sweet fighting.
Well, it was... I think it might be the same animator who did those really great sequences in the news, the one where we caught up on all the news around the world. I think that might be it, because it was like a load of really sweet transitions. Of setting you up, basically getting you supercharged for what's to come. We shall see. I may just watch the bit I saw on the GIF I saw on Twitter again instead. Right. Otherwise, we'll be back here next week on Tuesday.
That's correct.
We will see you then. Let me say goodbye and end the stream.